Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Tammy Schaffstall. I'm calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida, and I'll be your host tonight. I'm also a survivor of child abuse. Tonight's show is a question and answer open mic discussion show with Dr. Jaime Romo. He's a wonderful, wonderful co-host. I've hosted many times with Dr. Romo on here, and he is very informative and has a lot of information to share. So please call in and join us, 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. We know we have a lot of listeners out there who stream in, and I encourage you to call in and participate into the show, and it'll be fun. So please call. Before we get started, I'd like to tell you a little bit about NASCA. Excuse me. The National Association for Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we're self-supporting through our own contributions. If you'd like to donate to NASCA, we certainly could use the funds to support our community, and it is tax deductible. Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two perspectives. We educate the public, especially getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, and we present the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. We also offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Here at NASCA, we ask you to be aware, be a voice, be a hero, be brave. We're fighting for kids and serving adult survivors. Again, I'm encouraging folks to call in. The number is 646-595-2118. And we have two people. Well, we've got our guest, Dr. Jaime, who has called in, and we've got Roberta from Texas. And it's always a pleasure to have both of them on this show. So I'll tell you a little bit about Dr. Jaime Romo. He is from San Diego, California. He's an educator, consultant, author, and a commissioned minister. He promotes healing from abuse and prevention of child sexual abuse, particularly abuse by the religious authorities or the content of a religious setting. A workbook he wrote, Healing the Sexual Abused Heart, a workbook for survivors, thrivers, and supporters. It's an integration of various disciplines that led Dr. Jaime to become a certified traumatic incident reduction facilitator. So, wow, that's exciting. So I'm going to open Roberta's mic. She's calling in from Texas. Good evening, Roberta. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Just
yes,
plugging
I'm glad
along.
To be here tonight.
Yes. Okay, well, it's always a pleasure to have you. I'm just plugging along, excited for the show. Hopefully more people will call in. If not, we'll have a great discussion either way. Bill just popped in as well, so I'm going to open his mic. Bill Murray doesn't need any introduction, but I'll go ahead and give it to him anyway. He is the founder of NASCA. He is calling in from Pompano Beach, Florida, and he's one of my neighbors, whether he wants to be or not, he is. So good evening, Bill. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I can't complain, and I hardly ever do. That's nice to hear your voice, and Dr. Jaime Romo is a personal friend of mine, too, and Roberta, all of you. So glad to be here.
Well, glad to have you here, Bill. Thank you for calling in. Without further ado, I'm going to open Dr. Romo's mic. It's taking a minute. There you go. Well, good evening, Dr. Jaime. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. I just thought about that you all are 3 hours ahead, so that's kind of early evening.
It is.
I was
it's 8 o'clock.
This past weekend.
It's 8 o'clock here.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. This past weekend I was part of a 4-day workshop related to TIR, traumatic incident reduction. And maybe in the future, I mean, that was in service of me eventually becoming a trainer. So hopefully by the end of the year, I'll be a trainer for that. And I can offer trainings for people who would like to learn how to facilitate for others. And in the process, there's a lot of healing that happens. But a lot of people were on the East Coast. So I actually had to start at like 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. because other people were out in wherever. Canada and Virginia. So thanks for staying up.
Absolutely. I'm actually calling in from my office. I work for a yacht club here in South Florida, and we opened the club for the first time this week, and tonight is the first time they have music, so it's hopping out there. So we're really excited to have all that back here in South Florida. We are starting to open up. We're in phase one. So it's an exciting time for us, and everybody's happy to be back at the club. And I'm happy to be back in, you know, being able to go to the hairdresser and whatnot. So I don't mind staying up just a little bit late for the show. Things are going pretty well, so I'm in good spirits, and I'm ready for a good show. So thank you, Dr. Jaime. I really appreciate your kind thoughts. Well, let's go ahead.
I was going to say, may I offer an opening topic or thought?
That's exactly what I was going to do. I was going to turn it over to you and tell you that the mic is yours for you to open up and come up with some thoughts or, you know, how you want to take the direction of the show. So, Dr. Jaime, the mic is yours.
Thanks. Well, I am thinking about, I mean, of course, this whole pandemic and people are anxious to get out and there's an interesting article a few days ago in the New York Times. It was a story about this guy named Scott Kelly, an astronaut, who spent a year out in space four years ago. And he describes, I mean, so it puts perspective to the difficulty that we may have of being isolated, being separated from people, because we may be able to get out a little bit and he could get out nowhere for a year. And he has a few things that he did that I wanted to mention, in part because I think this whole pandemic thing is ongoing and we all have to have different tools to be able to maintain a sense of connection and meaning and purpose. And also because we just had Mother's Day, we're going to have Memorial Day, and there are some different, you know, holidays that may bring up stuff for people. So the three things that he did mentally, of course, physically, there were all kinds of changes, but mentally, what helped him was to first imagine how he wanted to end his year in space. I mean, what kind of energy or enthusiasm. I mean, what was his vision of how we wanted to end? And in uncertain times, I think we can get kind of focused on just getting out. But if we think, so his strategy is to imagine, what am I going to, how, and somehow that leads us, that not just gives us a general hope, but it gives us something that helps us to work towards in our own emotional state. The second thing he did was he looked back and he enjoyed the kinds of memories that he had, and even the painful ones, because it gave him perspective. He knew that he wasn't in those times, and he could take what was enjoyable and he could learn from what wasn't. And the third thing, apparently, is he did a kind of mental time travel. And apparently that's, no, I don't want to say apparently, I know that our minds are amazing and they can help us to imagine something different. And in that, it shifts our feeling, it shifts our insight. And I think about these days when we may want just something to go back to normal. And I don't know if that's going to happen. So we may need to think about, like, so whatever happens, how am I going to show up at the end of this, or as I go through this opening of, you know, city life? So there are those things that are kind of on my mind, like, how are we really preparing ourselves mentally to be stronger, to go forward in a time that is going to be different, in a time that may go on longer than we want? But I think those are some helpful strategies.
Well, I can tell you some of the things here at work that we're dealing with, and it's kind of bizarre for us. You know, like I said, I work for a yacht club, and here in South Florida, we have Miami-Dade, and we have Broward, and we have Palm Beach County. And Palm Beach County it's literally, Bella and I could almost throw a rock and hit that county. Literally, it's that close. And when you go over the county line, it's a different world. The masks are off, the stores are full, the restaurants are back to normal. You go over here in Broward County, and it's as strict as it could possibly be. You know, these are the three counties that got hit the hardest here in Florida. So, you know, people are struggling here in this area. What do we do? Is it okay to go out? Is it not okay to go out? In my opinion, some folks are waiting for the government to tell us that it's okay to go out to feel safe again. So it is an uncertain time. You know, how do we feel safe? You know, if I go across the county line, I can go to dinner without a mask, and people sitting, you know, pretty close in my space. I come over here to Broward County, and it's 6 feet apart, you know, the limited people in the stores and the restaurants. So what is, you know, what is the medium? What is going to be the normal? I don't know. So it is a different time, and you know, who knows when we're going to get back to normal. I can't wait for them to open the beaches up here. You know, living on the coast, to me, I would love to be able to go to the beach and get the fresh air, get the sunshine. To me, that would be therapeutic, but that's not an option for us. I've also heard that a lot of people that are closed indoors, you know, that's a lot of the viruses that spread. Everybody is telling everybody, stay home, stay inside, stay safe. And the latest statistics that I've heard are the ones that's where some of the illnesses are cropping up. So I don't know. I mean, I've got my own perspective, and I'm sure we all do. I just want to get back to normal. You know, I just want to get back to normal, do my thing, you know, not have to put on that mask and, you know, go on with life. But I have cohorts that are scared to death. You know, I've got family members that are scared to death, you know. So I don't know. What do you think? What do y'all think?
Well, one of the things that we did at this workshop this weekend is we talked about the power of the mind, and we actually practiced. It was very helpful. You can do traumatic incident reduction sessions on things that have happened in the past. You can also do them in the future, as if something is actually happening. And our mind doesn't know the difference, you know, in terms of how we get stressed out or and then how our bodies react. So it might be helpful to imagine what would be like the worst case scenario about going forward with this virus, and allow ourselves, I mean, it's something that should be done with a facilitator. I'll just say that, you know, the idea and his strategy of thinking about the future, I think can work in this way. And I've done this. Think about the worst case outcome and really let ourselves, you know, imagine it and feel it. And then if we need to think of that again and allow ourselves, you know, to see what comes up, and then imagine a not so bad version. And then imagine a not so bad version. And it's amazing that we start to sort out, you know, kind of what our fears are that really don't have that much weight. And I know when I've done that kind of thing, I've come out with a sense of, you know, if that was the worst thing, then I see it and I can get through it. And then as I think of, well, what would be the lighter version, it starts to get me thinking about, well, what am I doing different that would make it a lighter situation? And what do I need to do now to have even a better situation? And it all of a sudden gives us some insight into what we can do now. It's very empowering. So I think we can do something even with the uncertainty that is very helpful. And I think it's not helpful for people to let someone else kind of tell them how things are going to be all right, or, you know, like that's maybe helpful, maybe depending on other people. And what I'm saying is we have the power in ourselves to prepare and to do things now that free us up from some of the frustration as well as some of the anxiety.
Okay. Well, thank you for that insight. That's some really good information. Before we go any further, we do have another caller who has called in, and it's Regular Girl calling out of California. Good evening, Regular Girl. Thank you for joining the NASCA show. Welcome.
Thanks. I don't know if this is going to work because I'm outside and I'm actually driving in my motor wheelchair through my neighborhood, so we could encounter some wind that comes up or some neighbors. But we're in a good spot right now, so I will say hello to everybody. And I had some thoughts as you were talking, which were, I did encounter some neighbors, but I passed them by. And one of the things was I listened to another show earlier today, and they were talking about, interestingly enough, some of the positive things that have come from this. And although I have, there is some trauma that we do need to deal with, certainly about this for right now, because of what just happened, I'm going to put a different spin on it, which is, interestingly enough, what's interesting to me is the positive things that I've seen come from this. So I'm going to talk about that if I can for a few minutes. Can I? I'm going to wait for
Absolutely.
The yes before I go ahead. So I live in a cul-de-sac. So this is just one little thing of positivity that I've seen come from this, which is that as I go through the challenges, and as I see the people that I live with, I live in a house full of other adults, so they're roommates of similar age. I am over 65. I'm 65. So we're all independent of a similar age. I live in a cul-de-sac in a neighborhood in San Diego. Even though we were given the orders to stay inside and stay safe, and most people are compliant and we do what we have to do. However, what I saw right from the beginning was this kind of movement. It's almost like a regression. So that means that I grew up in the 60s where children played outside. We played outside in the streets. I saw that happening. I'm seeing it now. Away, because otherwise we would hear, what I saw was the neighbor across the street, she's walking home with her two children. They play outside now. They walk their dog. They ride their bicycles, the children in the neighborhood. And they do it with their parents because their parents have to stay home from work to walk their dogs. People in the neighborhood, we've gotten to know each other better. And so while there's been this trauma that we've had to deal with, what I've also seen is there's been a level of intimacy that we've dealt with as well. We're having to deal with kids. I'm having to wheel my chair. Some other neighbors are coming down the block. It's beautiful outside, and I am getting some fresh air. I'm not wearing my mask as I go through the neighborhood. I've heard that as I've listened to shows that the police are dealing behind the scenes, that they're dealing with their feelings about having to ticket people about this ordinance. And I personally have, on my motor chair, as I go through the neighborhood, I don't wear my mask as I drive through the neighborhood. And actually, I'm seeing someone coming jogging right now towards me, a young woman, and she's not wearing her mask. But the police did not stop and give me tickets. I saw four patrol cars the other day, and they did not stop giving me tickets. These are people. They live in homes. They talk to their neighbors. They're in angst about it, too. You know, do they want to do this? Do they want to ticket people? On the other hand, I heard a story where some neighbors a couple of blocks away called and snitched on their neighbors because they saw that they had additional neighbors besides their family members swimming in their pools together. You see, we're kind of at odds about this thing that's going on.
Right.
But I want to talk about those positive aspects of it that I see that at the same time that there's this distancing, we're supposed to be socially distancing, I have been noticing a closeness that's going on with each other. That's interesting.
Right. Right. Well, thank you for those thoughts, regular girl. You're right. We've seen some positive and negatives in some of this. I like what Dr. Jaime said, though, is, and I believe this too, this is my thoughts, I don't like someone else having to tell me how to feel about it. I think we are individuals and Americans. We should be able to make up our own minds. At the same time, we have a responsibility to protect the vulnerable. Kids need to get out. You gave us an example. Kids need to get out and get some fresh air. They need to play. Kids aren't really affected by this, but they're carriers. But we've got the older and the older folks and who have been hit the worst on this, and people with underlying issues. They need to be protected. If in fact somebody is at risk, then they need to stay home. Maybe we need to support those folks, but they have a choice to stay home. Where folks who aren't, that want to get out there, then in my opinion they should. I don't like the government having to tell us mandate, giving us tickets and arresting people for doing things and not allowing us to have one of our amendment rights go to church. We've got to think in the church. It does spread in the church, but a lot of our liberties have been compromised through all this. But there have been a lot of good things too. I wanted to get some other folks who hadn't had an opportunity to talk to make a comment if they so choose, and I wanted to see if I could go back to Roberta. That all the mics are open. It is an open mic. But if I see somebody who may not have had an opportunity to talk, I wanted to throw the mic to them. So, Roberta, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I don't know. I guess, off and on all my life, I've isolated myself in a lot of ways, so I'm used to being alone, And, I like being alone. And because, I lived in unsettled peace and in a house of violence and always violence, years, and the times I would have alone, I loved it, and it was peaceful, and that's what, I'm loving it. Ever since I moved into this apartment, I started moving, ever since about 2000 and 2010, up until now, you know, even though I've had some surgeries, I've been in and out of the hospital and things like that. You know, I've been more alone, and I you know, I just love it. You know, it's peaceful, and I love the quiet. You know, because I write poetry, and you know, I read, and I cook, and you know, things like that. And I used to, when I was younger, whenever I used to, you know, be pretty wild, you know, I'd go out all the time, you know, and, you know, all hours of the night. I mean, sometimes I wouldn't come home until 3 or 4 in the morning, you know, but, you know, I don't do that anymore. And plus I'm almost 60 years old now, and I just don't have the energy for all that now. So, you know, it's just, you know, I guess, you know, I kind of do get paranoid about being around other people. When I do go out, I have to go out to the grocery store, and I'm kind of concerned about having to go to the doctor June 2nd and June 4th, the eye doctor June 4th, and, you know, I have to go out to where they're at, and I'm kind of concerned about it, you know, and I've been wearing my mask, they're not required to wear a mask around here, but I see a lot of people that don't wear a mask, but I do. I'm not paranoid, you know, but I just want to be cautious, you know.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I appreciate that, and that's understandable. Bill, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm in one of those at-risk populations because I'm 67 now. I believe I'm in it. But anyway, I believe in erring on the side of caution. And I want to bring this back to, you know, child abuse and trauma issues, because that's what the show's about. I think each of us who have had to deal with the mandated isolation that's come along with certain restrictions, we're actually better prepared as a community, those of us who are in recovery, like Roberta said, than the general population, because we've dealt with this sense of isolation before, or actual isolation before. And so we can use some of the same tools and techniques and habits and so forth that we've acquired over the years. Now, that's not true necessarily of newcomers, but if you've had any kind of recovery under your belt, just a little, you start to know, for example, the benefit of reaching out by phone, right, or by email, or now we have Zoom and Skype, and we've been using them. We've been using them more during this time, and sure enough, they're very effective. Other people who don't have the benefit of having ever had to deal with trauma really don't have those kinds of techniques. I also have shared many times what Jaime said. You know, when you're faced with a decision, you look at the best case and the worst case scenario. This is what I recommend, and imagine what those two are going to be. And
did we lose you? Hello? Can anybody else hear me?
I can hear him. Yeah, he dropped out. He dropped out.
I can hear you.
Okay.
Yeah, he did drop out.
Well, hopefully Bill will come back, and then I'll give him back the mic. And I got that, and I understand, Aaron, on the side of caution if you feel at risk. One of the things, well, a couple of things that really concern me with isolation, particularly with children and domestic violent mm-hmm. victims, is, you mm-hmm. know, kids now, they're trapped. You know, they're isolated at home.
Right.
Sometimes the only outlet they have is when they go to school. I'm not a big advocate for homeschooling. I am not. I mean, I'm not saying that all homeschooling is bad, but, you know, I think there should be a rigorous, you know, strict guidelines for homeschooling, because we already know that a lot of kids who are homeschooled are also tortured at home, and they have no outlet. And the same thing goes with this. You have to stay home. You know, with your kids and your parents, and the numbers have gone through the roof. So
yeah,
that's a huge concern to bring that back to, you know, to child abuse and domestic abuse
issues.
What?
Bill, did you come in or out? Bill, we keep losing you. Hopefully, Bill will come back in because we're losing him. But Dr. Jaime, do you have any thoughts that you'd like to share with us on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would like to join Bill in linking this to child abuse.
Right.
Because I think that one of the impacts of child abuse is that we can develop, I would call it, kind of either or thinking. And to be safe, I mean, there's that, either flee or fight. And it's a challenge, how do we have a positive attitude and so on and see the good that's coming out, the connections that people are making and reaching out and so on. And it's also be responsible. How can we recognize that kids can be vulnerable and others at home with abusers, and we want people to be safe. And how can we have both faith and science? And I think so that's one thought is I think child abuse can mess with our ability to think with more complexity in saying, how can the abuser be a good person and abusive? How can I be a victim and perhaps a victimizer? And so, I want to recognize that we are carriers, not just of germs, but also of carriers of hope and carriers of responsibility. And we have our own desires and we have a responsibility to others. So I think I hope that we develop a sense of if we didn't want to be victim of someone else's actions, why would we want others to be a victim of ours, intentional or not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you for that. I'd like to, before you do, I would like to go, because we have two people who have joined us. Bill, we lost you for a minute, so hopefully, you can join the show. I'm not sure what happened, but you your voice went out on us. But before we go any further, I want to make sure that I include these people so I don't lose them so they don't drop off or not be able to be included. And the first one I'd like to open is also from an area code 409. Area code 409, which is not Roberta, ends in 1041. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
It's me, Roberta. I got lost and I couldn't, their phone was going in and out and I had to call back.
Oh, okay. Cool. All right. Well, thank you. So I see that now I see that it's the same number. All right. Thank you so much. Now I'd like to go to area code 931, which I think may be Darlene in Tennessee. Darlene, is this you?
Yes, it is. Hello.
Thank you for joining us, Darlene in Tennessee. It's
You're
a pleasure
welcome.
To have you. Okay.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, someone wanted to make a comment. It may have been Regular Girl, I think. Regular Girl, did you have a comment you wanted to make in reference to what Bill and Dr. Jaime was speaking of?
I did, yes, thanks. I wanted to add on to what Dr. Jaime was just talking about. It reminded me of something that Alice Miller, she's written quite a few books. She's not with us any longer. And she, I'm paraphrasing, but she had said once that she thought that survivors, recovered survivors of child abuse, made good activists sometimes. And so in adding on to what Dr. Jaime just said, that recently, because of what's going on with this these ordinances in myself and in my own recovery, I'm struggling with things in myself, my own reaction to things that I, because I'm aware that I feel like I have a responsibility in how I react, like say on Facebook in how I am seen by others, so that because I was abused, I am a victim of abuse, and so that I have a part of me that can get very mean and very sadistic myself. and I can lash out. And I have a sister who's also in recovery. I can say we were on the phone yesterday, and the both of us got very angry. We want to go to protests and things like this. And then I find myself thinking afterwards, you know, is this going to be the most effective way to deal with being oppressed? Because like you were talking about when I first came onto the show, you know, many of the things that are being done to us are, I don't think, are right. You know, they're not, I mentioned some positive things that are happening, but there are many things that are not positive that are coming from this that I have not mentioned, you know, that are hurtful. So I can react in, because I am a victim. I was a victim of abuse and being oppressed by people. And so those things are still inside me. So like I was saying, you know, I have to sit and think to myself, you know, there are other activists, you know, Mahatma Gandhi was one of them, who, you know, got the English to walk out of India in a way that
right.
was peaceful but active. And I've studied those things all my life, but I don't always act like that. See? So, you know, when he was talking just now,
right.
you know, I have to pause and reflect. And
right.
need a source of greater wisdom, you know, always in my day. And, you know, I don't always.
Yeah, we can barely.
Like
can, you know, I can, regular girl, I can barely hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, see, yeah.
That's
I'm
okay.
In the spot right now. Okay. Okay.
Okay, I think we got the gist of what you were trying to say, so thank you for that. But it did get kind of hard to hear. But I would like to throw it back to the panel to see if anybody has any comments. You know, Dr. Jaime or Bill, we've all the mics are open. I am going to mute that because there's a lot of background noise. And I'll open it back up in just a few minutes. So does anybody have any comments they'd like to make so far?
I just want to explain that.
Go ahead, Bill.
I was talking and all of a sudden realized nobody was hearing me. And then I did not hear whatever Jaime said most recently that regular girl was referring to. So I'm not the best person to share first. It sounded like Roberta wanted to talk.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say
okay.
I didn't get to hear what Bill had to say.
So, yeah.
And you were
missing
going in and out.
Well, Bill, if you want to pick up on what you were talking about, because it's all related, you were bringing it back to the subject of you know child abuse, trauma, and recovery, and I think you had said that you know you erred on the side of caution, and I think right after that we lost you. So. Please, if you have some thoughts
okay.
to share.
Well, that gives me a little idea of where I was. I also may have said by the time you heard me that I'm in one of those vulnerable populations because I'm 67 and that technically means I'm a senior citizen. And there's an awful lot of them all around me. And we saw, Tammy, you know, many people wearing masks and all the – I don't know how relaxed – places have gotten in the last couple of days, but I was at Walmart. I'm not Walmart. Yeah, Walmart today, and you know everybody in the store was masked, and I think that's still a requirement there. But anyway, I do think we should err on the side of caution. I also was saying that again. I don't want to repeat myself, but Dr. Jaime, you know, talked about how you measure. Risk, really, or can you accept the worst case scenario? And that's exactly what I say to people all the time, that one of the ways to make a choice, to make a decision, is to consider both the worst case scenario and the best case scenario. And if you can accept both extremes, then you're okay to take an action because the majority of the time, vast, vast majority of the time, whatever does occur happens between those two. It's in the middle. Life happens in the middle, somewhere in the middle. Our brains are kind of programmed, being trauma victims, to imagine either, you know, the worst, and that would make us a sort of a depressive type person, or the best, and that would make us sort of a you know, a manic type person almost. And we very rarely, you know, come from a place of somewhere in between. So I recommend that. That's how I make this. That's how I know I'm free to make a choice. I still make the best choice I can, but there isn't as much fear involved. And I think that's one of our challenges as survivors. And the last thing I said, regular girl, was to you, that cops, I understand the cops being resistant to being social workers. They've been doing this for years because we've piled on extra duties to people who went into law enforcement, thinking themselves as public safety people, but not public health people. And for a long time, we've had them deal with the homeless and the mental illness and the, you know, on and on and on, all kinds of things. And now this, and they don't want to do this. They want, I think the best way to use cops, you know, is to have them do the distribution of the masks rather than the ticketing of people. And again, that's just a comment about community policing. But I understand their, you know, not being happy about being told to give out tickets. And a lot of them just simply don't. That was my whole comment, Tammy. I hope I didn't overstep just now by repeating it.
No, you didn't, because we lost most of it. I can tell you that, again, if you went to the Broward Walmart, it's Broward County. They're very strict over here. You go over to Palm Beach, and it's going to be a whole different environment. I promise you. We've all commented on that, but that's okay. I mean, that's county to county.
But I live in Broward, you know, so I don't.
That's right.
It.
You live,
you know,
in Broward.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, we're going to learn a lot about this thing in the future.
Uh-huh.
It's going to cost lives to get there, but we're going to continue to measure the effect of this and that and the other thing, and we're going to make some adjustments and changes sometime. It's just where we are right now with dealing with the illness.
Right. Right. And I don't know if you heard the comment I made. And oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
I interrupted, so please, and then I'll follow.
No. You go ahead, Dr. Jaime. You've got the floor. I was just going to ramble on, but go ahead.
Thank you. I want to link this issue in general with our growth as people who were once victims. I know, and a regular girl in California kind of used that phrase, and I think it's really significant how we identify. And in the workbook, it can describe the victim experience and how that may show up in our ways we think about ourselves and others, and the ways that we interact and have trust and deal with authority. That's a big deal, because authority has been hurtful to us. And it may have been a parent or a school figure or a church figure. And so there are layers of that authority that should have been there to protect that was hurtful. And so I think that has a huge impact on how we deal with other formal authority as well as take up our own. And so after the victim experience, we may kind of be survivors and still be very reactive to authority. And as we, I think, move along and take up our own authority and take responsibility for, okay, my life, whatever happened to me, it's on me now to grow and to learn and to make choices. And so instead of necessarily rejecting or reacting to authority, I take up my own and I recognize that I also have authority, not authoritarian, but I have, you know, some agency, some influence. And so I have a responsibility, you know, like, wow, that's a huge thing to realize how much we impact others. And so I think about whether it's this pandemic thing or how are we going to end child abuse. I think it matters how we see our own authority and how we take it up in a good way for the purpose of serving, you know, to help heal, you know, to help prevent more abuse. So whether it's this pandemic thing or
other things directly related to child abuse, there is authority that should be challenged when it is causing harm. But there is also, I think it's important for us to at least be reflective about, you know, is this reaction for me towards authority like old, or is this really something in the moment that is helpful? You know, am I responding or am I reacting? And so I want to just encourage us to be mindful that our past does influence. It does for me. I don't like to be told what to do. That's why I got all kinds of degrees, so I could be in charge. That's, and now I really have to have a bit more humility and recognize times where I need to step up, be a good example, but do it in a responding, not in a reacting way. I'll stop there.
Well, I like that a lot. Thank you, Amy.
That was some good thoughts. Okay, well, it is 8:46. We've got about 45 minutes left of the show, and we've got Dr. Jaime's calling in from San Diego. We've got Bill calling in from Pompano Beach, Florida. We have Regular Girl from California. We have Roberta from Texas, Darlene from Tennessee, and I'm Tammy. I'm calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida. So we've been discussing you know, what we can do to change in the pandemic. And we've tied it into to our survivor community as well. Does anybody have any other comments that they would like to make on this subject? And then we'll open it up to either continue or to bring up another subject. Any comments? Okay. Okay, well, does anybody else have any – oh, let me share the telephone number. If anyone is listening, streaming, we'd love to have you join us. The telephone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. So please call us and join the discussion if you would like. Does anybody have a topic, you know, that they would like to bring up? Something we've talked about in the past or something that you may be struggling with, all the mics are open. Any thoughts? Dr. Jaime, if you've got any thoughts that you'd like to share?
I do. I do. I do. Like
okay.
Like it.
Okay, go ahead, Dr. Jaime.
I kind of want to link it to, thank you, to this idea of authority and being responsible to this activity. I'll just describe it that I experienced last weekend, and it was pretty simple. It was very helpful, and it was basically paying attention to our own body, and it really made it clear, like, I have authority over my own body. I mean, I'm responsible for my own body, and I'm right now looking for some of the questions in this little, basically, you know, we sat and we just, you know, answered the question, you know, like, talk to your body, ask your body how it's doing and what does your body say to you? And we just really took that in and then said, okay, now I'm going to respond to my body. And then, you know, your body has something to tell you. What's it telling you? And now I can respond to that. And what do I want to say to my body? And it happened that I had tried to run too far, too quickly last weekend and had a monster cramp in my calf and ended up walking half the way home. And so that was fresh with me, that I was sitting and just listening to my body saying, you know, you need to pay attention to me. You need to rest and you need to stretch. You're not a, you know, superhuman. And so I had this conversation and kind of just being very present. And that's kind of, I mean, it went on, but that's kind of what I meant by, like, I made my body a victim of me. You know? and I don't want to be a victim of my own actions. So I need to stop and pay attention and in little ways. Just be mindful of my actions and how they impact myself, how they impact other people, because it's easy to focus on how other people impact us. because that was the victim experience. Right? So I just offer that as a suggestion, as a real practical strategy about being a bit more aware of how we treat ourselves as a way to have an idea of how we might inadvertently treat other people, good or bad.
You know, I'm glad you brought this up, and it's a subject that that I gladly engage in. In my thoughts, in my opinion, a lot of times us survivors of child abuse or domestic abuse or anyone who has beat us down physically, mentally, emotionally, even when they have long since left our lives, we picked up the bats and beat ourselves emotionally and mentally. You know, those of us who did endure emotional abuse and we were told mean things like, you're dumb, you're worthless, you're stupid, you're ugly, this world would be better off without you, and just the mean things, and, just mean things, belittling, putting down. You know, that, especially when it happens to us as a child, it gets tattooed in our brains. And for whatever reason, people tend to buy into it, you know, especially when you're a little kid and you've got these adults telling you this thing over and over, and you learn to believe it. I think it's very important for survivors to understand that the people who defined us or tried to define us as children, they didn't have the right to define us. You know, just because somebody told us for 10, 15 years, whatever, that we were dumb or stupid or worthless doesn't mean that we're dumb or stupid or worthless. And we've got to learn to love ourselves. You know, we're with ourselves 24/7. We can't get away from ourselves. I don't know if you've ever embarrassed yourself or something and you had that feeling where you just can't get away from yourself. I have. But, you know, through time and through you know, learning, I've learned how to love myself. I've learned how to, you know, humbly, not boastfully, but just humbly, you know, understand that I do have self-worth and I do count. And those people didn't have a right to tell me what they told me. And I think that's important for survivors to learn, how to love yourself. And it's not easy for us. It sounds really, really easy, and it sounds really, really basic, but it's not, because those habits have been instilled in us for a long time. And people don't really physically beat themselves, but you know, we don't take care of ourselves, you know, pushing ourselves too far. But I think you're right, and you know, we do need to value ourselves physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And try to take care of ourselves and listen to our bodies and our minds. You know, how do we speak to ourselves? I don't know. That's just going through my mind, Dr. Jaime. Anybody else?
I have something to say.
Please.
You know, I this is Roberta. I just wanted to say, I had to get to a place where, I finally learned to accept Roberta as she is, you know, because, I couldn't find Roberta. And, I'm still having a hard time finding pieces of Roberta, but at least Roberta isn't, like, completely, you know, like, lost, you know, and way out there, you know. And I guess... there's times, you know, I wonder, you know, where parts of my body are and what's being done to them and who I'm with and what exactly, you know, because I think I went through some religious abuses and you know, they feel, you know, it's kind of like, you know, they didn't have a right to religiously abuse me. And I don't know if it was a priest or I don't know if it was a family member or, you know, a nun or someone, it might have just been someone that belonged to the church and they just decided that they'd abuse me because, you know, because they felt like they had a right to. I don't know. But, you know, I just don't feel like that I should be made to feel like that I'm some kind of material or merchandise or an object and I'm under lock and key and or under the gun and, you know, and that I'm just like trapped. You know, and you know, I was thinking about that today, and that's why I felt for a long time. And I was around people like that in my early childhood, and then I was around someone in my later in my life like that. And I don't know how, I can't connect to how, I mean, I guess because automatically it happened in my childhood, I went and I was around somebody else that was like that. They were misusing their power and privileges with their authority, you know? And so, anyway, it's just something, you know, I love Roberta, yes, but, you know, she still has a lot to come out of the dark out of, and, you know, and you know, it hurts inside my heart and soul because, I still hurt my heart and soul, and I don't know if I love my heart because I'm so angry, and I have so much anger, and, you know, and whenever I start to think about some of these things, you know, it just, you know, I mean, I was belittled, I was degraded, I was dehumanized, I was, you know, all them things. I went through that too, but I went through years and years of this, and it's just hard right now. But I do love Roberta now enough to know that she don't have to put up with any more abuse, especially now that she's in her own apartment. You know, now if I was homeless or if I didn't have the means to be able to pay for an apartment to live here, I mean, I'd still be living around these abusive people. I'd be homeless, you know. So I'm really grateful for where I am, you know. At least I get to know me now. You're learning to know me and love me more and more each day.
Well, Roberta, this is where I was saying that people in recovery, even if they're in relatively early recovery still, start to acquire a sense of themselves that's more appropriate than the one that they came in with. And they also take better actions, and they end up with better lives. So, you know, you are an example what I'm talking about, that we're better prepared. You are familiar with trauma, you know, very familiar with it, but now you've got some tools, and when this virus comes along, you can use exactly the same tools in order to the sense of loneliness that, quote, normal people have never experienced. You know, they're at a loss how to deal with this stuff. They also come from a place of self-will, a lot of self-will. We are a self-willed nation. In fact, we're kind of self-will run riot a lot of times. You know, we do have the personal liberty of making our own choices, but we can't do that at the expense of the general population, you know, of the society we live in. That's not part of our civil rights, you know, our constitutional rights. Yes, we have the freedom to choose, but we don't have the freedom to choose something that's damaging. So, you know, we have to weigh that. And I think people in recovery already have a sense of this, a lot of this. And that puts us ahead of the game, if you want. And I want people who are listening tonight who might be new to know that, you know, there are so many things that you can have through NASCA that are going to help you in many, many ways. Trauma, no matter what the origin of the trauma was or is. But of course, if you're listening to this show, your trauma existed in childhood. You know, people who don't have childhood trauma don't listen to this show. And you belong here, and we have a lot to offer. So I'm really grateful for that description, Roberta. It sounded right on to me.
Thank you. I just really, you know, you're talking about where, you know, I mean, sometimes I really, 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 really want real hard to know where the problem originated, you know. And, you know, I work real hard at trying to find out now, you know. And I guess I'm working too hard at it because, I mean, it's been uncovering a lot of things.
Right. That's right. I think you're doing great.
Roberta, I agree. And I don't know that we remember as much as is helpful, I think. It presents itself at a time when maybe we have more stability or more resources. Oh, and what's useful. But I think we can kind of detoxify some of those messages that we got. And, like, I'm not sure, like, what kind of message
you named I'm sorry, a few things. Like, what was like a message, a wrong message that you got?
What was the wrong message I got?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, with these, for example, I'll just say for me, I'll offer this as something that might be helpful. I grew up with all kinds of bad messages about who I was. You know, you mentioned one that I related to, is that I was, someone who could be used. You know, there was an abuser in my life, and he definitely groomed and exploited my vulnerability and, you know, used me, and it was very hurtful, physically, emotionally, spiritually. And so I think a message that I grew up with was that, that I was to be used by other people. And that's a wrong message, you know, but so at one point I had to get a sense of what was the message that I got, and was that a wrong message? Yeah, it was a wrong message. And then I have to say, yeah, that was the wrong message. So what would the right message be? Well, maybe the right message would be like, I deserve to, you know, live a life of dignity and respect. That's the right message. I could just say that again and again. The other one was the wrong message, and this one is the right message. There are a lot of messages that we may, you know, have to pay attention to and kind of change, you know, acknowledge them, challenge them, and replace them. And so whether we ever get down to the, you know, bottom of what was the source of all this stuff, we can certainly start to do some healing work in those kinds of ways. So just offer that as something that might be useful.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks for that, Dr. Jaime. I wanted to give a Darlene an opportunity. We haven't heard from Darlene in a while. Darlene in Tennessee, do you have any thoughts or comments you'd like to share?
Yes, I do. I just, all of a sudden it dawned on me, you know, it's a duh moment. We think of it plenty of times. But, you know, I want to say this for the listeners, that back then, back when we were growing up, we were not, even if we told an adult we were being beat, it's like there was nothing they would do, you know. But now they got all these laws that children, and see, there's going to be more people apt to listen and try to help now. So there is hope.
Right. Well, I think you're right. You know, we've made some headway in the fight against child abuse. We've got a lot of ways to go. But years ago, you didn't think about, you know, bringing it up. You protected the family. So, you know, I guess we'll take what we can get. Does anybody have any comments they'd like to make on what Darlene shared?
I do. At the risk of saying too much. Go ahead. Go ahead. I interrupted someone.
Go ahead, Dr. Jaime.
All right, and then I will go. Just the idea of, we can compare, and I think it's useful also to recognize, you know, what's the same and what's different. What's the same about today? Oh, there is still abuse. There is still all this exploitation. What's different? There are more people with more skills, more consciousness. There are organizations. There's more of a culture that recognizes that we need to end abuse. And so even though some things may be discouraging, there's a lot. And if we think about what's different, you know, yeah, thank God that's different today. And so we can build on that. We can keep building. I think that's, to me, hope that's grounded. You know, it's confidence, because there are some things that are different. That's all, thanks.
Okay. I lost my screen. Sorry about that. I lost my screen. Bill, what about you? Do you have some comments that you'd like to share at this time?
Well, I'm enjoying the conversation. I think maybe it was Regular Girl who tried to interject a comment a moment ago. If it was, I'd like her to feel free.
I was just going to say, there's still, in my case, there's still some secrets regarding that in my family history that are still the same, that it's just horrible, that I'm trying to deal with in uncovering and exposing, that you'd think it was still 100 years ago. They're still protecting the secrecy of them in terms of the sexual abuse and the violence in my family.
That's true.
And recently, as I look at it in the family dynamic, in the history, I think to myself, my God, is this still real? Am I still a part of it? You know, am I still that afraid? You know, and the answer is obviously yes. You know, still more recovery, and I've been in 12-step recovery. You know, the first layer of it was my own substance abuse. That was 1975. Me and my sister, we were kids. You know, that means we were pioneers, really. You know, and so that's my comment on that. And
I got something to say.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know what I wanted to do before I did that was I wanted to ask if I was mumbling. I'm sorry, because it probably
was. No, you weren't. You weren't.
Yeah, I didn't hold the mic up. Sorry.
I wanted to comment this, Darlene, again. I wanted to comment on what you were saying. That goes to show everyone that the repercussions that we face from, it's not like if they abused us years ago, it's not like you just get over it. You know, it's got a lifetime of effect.
Yes.
So some of the things get better in time, but there's still
some things. To the children of the children of the children of the children of the children. It's like a disease. It's like a virus. It is a psychological virus. That's what it is.
Well, it's a pandemic, is what it is, and it's a behavior that we hope someday we can break in the society. But you know, I also want to remind us that myself, but anyone listening, that we're not responsible for changing all of society. We're responsible for changing ourselves. And we break the cycle when we raise our own family to not have the experience that we had. And we don't pass it on when we stop doing the behavior. We talked a couple minutes ago about messages and behavior that you got when you were a kid that you realized now were incorrect. Mine was martyrdom, one of them. I mean, lots of them, but one of them was martyrdom. I thought you had to suffer, and you were supposed to display your suffering, because that's the model I grew up with, my mother. And I continued that behavior well into my 20s and into recovery, really, that I could be hurt, and I'd show you I was hurt, and I'd show you why I was hurt. And I, you know, got a lot of attention, negative attention, but a lot of attention out of that because it made me different, special, and unique. But in recovery, I've decided that that is a false message that I was given, and part of my correcting myself is a commitment to not continuing that behavior. It's not just recognition. It's not passing it on, too. You know, it's stopped the behavior in me that's part of making amends, really, to society. I mean, I did some damage there, you know. and I can't go back and correct what I did, but from this point forward, I can. I can make a choice to see myself not as a martyr, but really as really living in a very high percentile of all people that have ever lived. That doesn't mean my life is perfect. But I don't get to pick a couple of things that I might want to a little better and make them the total focus of my life and how I relate to everybody else. So I try to come from this place of being grateful for the fact. I mean, I really do believe everybody on this call lives in the 99.9 percentile of people living on Earth. because of who we are, the era we live in, that we're Americans, for example, that's part of it. I think we're all white as well, or light-skinned if we're Latin. you know, right, Heine? I mean, that's a benefit. Come on. A huge benefit. And I need to remember that, you know, I have a choice whether I see myself as suffering or as perhaps challenged in certain ways, but really in the measure of things, far ahead of the game than probably most people that are on Earth.
I agree. I'd like just to add a thought to what both Regular Girl said and Bill. I mean, the idea of the abuse that gets passed on from generation to generation, and the part of that is the secrets that are kept that protect people. Because I think it is true that if it's not checked, if it's not addressed, that things do go on for generations. And then Bill's comment about, you know, this violence, this child abuse is pandemic. Like, it is something that is worldwide. It is something that has ongoing damage, and a lot of people don't recognize it. And so on one hand, there's that kind of pandemic. On the other hand, there's this other kind of virus pandemic. And I think they both call us to recognize, to see what is there, what is unpleasant, what we don't want to be there, and not be in denial about it. And at the same time, what Bill said, we can't change everything, but we can change our part. And how do we contribute to that? Either by, you know, overt action or by inaction? Or how do we, you know, change it in part by changing it in ourselves and then doing things also that would actually interrupt or break that cycle? And those two things seem to me to be very parallel. And it's interesting, you know, to me, we may like one as a real danger and not the other. You know, stop there.
Throw in light-skinned Hispanic for Jaime's sake, though, because he's a light-skinned.
I am so not
man,
light,
by the way.
Light-skinned.
I think
okay,
you
can
are.
I tell you,
I think, and a he's
quick,
a very attractive
a goofy
man.
Story.
Okay.
Thank you. My grandmother was blind, so she wouldn't know. Right. But she was very fair-skinned. There's a lot of internalized racism in all kinds of groups. She would tell me not to go out in the sun so I wouldn't get dark like an Indian. Right. So there's this internalized racism. If you get dark, you look like an Indian, you're less than. My grandmother was blind. She never saw me, and I am not light-skinned. So anyway, attention.
You're light-skinned in my eyes, Jaime, you know? And he's a very handsome guy, by the way, ladies. A very handsome guy, way better looking than I am. So, but anyway,
I have darker skin.
Tammy, save it.
I've only been alone. I have the darker skin, too. I've got a lot of Indian in my background.
Oh, for God's sake.
That's my heritage, so I am Indian.
You're not dark-skinned. Oh, my God, Tammy.
Me? Oh, my God, yes, I am.
You are not.
Yeah, I'm pretty dark skinned. Sure, I am. I've got a better chance than you do.
It's falling apart.
Yeah, it is.
Falling
yes,
apart.
It is.
Yeah. Well, you know, our heritage. You know, one of the things. You know, in my studies, in my doctorate studies, that's what I'm studying is discrimination, and I've come across a lot of articles, a lot of peer articles on heritage, and it's an interesting study because we teach our children to embrace our heritage, and then we send them out in the world and say diversify. So, you know, there are some things that, you know, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, blue, yellow, whatever, Indian. And, you know, I've got American Indian on both sides of my family. My grandmother on my paternal side was a full-blooded Blackfoot, and my grandfather was half Cherokee. And then on my mother's side, my grandfather was half Cherokee. So I've got a very strong American Indian heritage, and I'm proud of it. The blonde comes from my hairdresser, Bill. But anyway,
not okay.
You know, we've
okay.
We've got to embrace, you know, we embrace, you know, our heritage. You know, a lot of things, you know, with the Indian culture, you know, because I've got, the strong Indian background. There was a lot of abuse that came through the American Indian culture.
But again, that's kind of, I shouldn't have brought up skin color. It's an outside issue here because we're all the same here.
Okay.
That's the point, is that, you know, at NASCA, it doesn't matter the color of your skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying we're the great, we should be the ones that are kind of, you know, on the measure of things, grateful that we've had this path, because I think it does put us at some advantage to the, you know, probably 25 or 30% of the world experiences childhood abuse, right? And a tiny percentage gets into recovery. Now, that's being offered to people that are listening tonight who might be newcomers, and I want them to know that, you know, we're all equal here. It doesn't, it's the skin color thing, I shouldn't have brought it up, because it doesn't matter to us. And by the way, child abuse is an equal opportunity destroyer of people, no matter what culture you come from, no matter where in the world you are. So that's, again, I wanted to bring it back to child abuse issues, because I made a mistake of bringing up skin color. But the point is that we all are living in, I really do believe, the 99 percentile, you know, of people that have lived on Earth, certainly, or living now on Earth. But there is this nagging thing that we all also have because we're child abuse survivors. It's called trauma. And the trauma goes on. And there are mixed messages that come with trauma that we try to clarify for ourselves and get a better perspective on as we move forward in recovery. And we become a little more comfortable with whoever we are, whatever our experience and whoever we are. We become, I mean, that's one of the benefits of recovery too, is becoming comfortable inside a bill and then not doing as much damage to society as I've proven in the past I'm capable of doing, and I'm trying not to do now. You know, I think we have the ball's in our court, really, to improve ourselves, yes, but also society, because we'll never not have a place to do it. Because there are always going to be other folks that need the message that I just ineloquently tried to give. But anyway,
well, Bill, I want to add, and I think the topic actually in bringing up Native American experiences is a great example of trauma in a community. A really awesome, many stories. Sherman Alexie is one author. One great book he has called You Don't Have to Say You Love Me. It's about his mom and his relationship. And it's poetic, but it just opens up so much painful experience of trauma. And what I take from that and many other, our own experiences, is that, yeah, we can be a better version. We can break the cycle. And so that's one thought. And the other is also joining with what you said. A central belief that I have in experience is that we all have privilege, some more, some less. We all have bias, some more, some less. And we all have trauma. And so there's no shame in that. The shame is in not recognizing it and working with it so it is useful to help somebody. But to me, all these topics are linked, even if it doesn't sometimes sound like it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Well, it is 9:20, so we do have about 10 minutes left of the show. I had to close Regular Girl's mic because we had a lot of background noise, but I'm going to go ahead and open it again now. So we've got Bill in Florida, Dr. Jaime in California, Regular Girl calling in from California, Roberta in Texas, Darlene in Tennessee, and I'm calling in from Florida. So I think we had a pretty good discussion there. Does anybody who hasn't had a chance to speak have anything to say lately? Have anything to say? I want to make sure everybody is included and have an opportunity to do so. Anyone? All the mics are open. Okay. Well, with 10 minutes left, does anybody have, or Dr. Jaime, do you have another topic that you'd like to present with us? Anything that may be on your mind that you would like to share during this during your show?
This is Darla.
Somebody else. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, darling.
I noticed that so many kids, that's good that they say, this is my body, right? But as far as the sexual abuse goes, but when the parents try to get their kids to obey, they're saying, I don't have to mind. This is my body. I can do whatever I want. You know, just my life, you know. There's a lot of conflict with that today. You know what I'm saying? Kids got a lack of respect for the parents and stuff. And I know during this pandemic, there's probably a lot more cases of child abuse and spousal abuse and stuff.
Well, I can confirm that, Darlene.
Yeah.
Both are true. Children are now, in effect, trapped with their predators, an awful lot of them, because they don't even have the ability to find some relief part of the day when they go to school. They don't go to school. They're in the home all the time. So that's going on, yes. And also domestic violence has increased. You have, again, a couple who at least are separated for part of the day when one or the other or both go to work. That's not happening anymore. So they're really on top of each other. And, of course, the children in a situation like that are getting damaged at an exorbitant rate. We're also seeing more homicides, in domestic violence situations, a little more anyway that I've heard is from my law enforcement folks that this is a particularly dangerous time. They're taking these domestic violence calls very seriously, as they always do, but they're even more because there has been a spike in that. There's been a lowering, by the way, in general homicides in most cities, but in domestic violence homicides. And so, this is something we should be aware of, and especially from the perspective of the kids in these situations. This is a whole other cadre of child abuse victims now who need to be protected as best they can now in childhood, but are also, in the end, most of them are going to survive childhood but come into adulthood dragging behind them years of trauma, just like each one on the panel tonight did. And they are going to have to be served by people like us, because someday they'll be adults.
Well, I'm still dragging things behind me. This is Roberta, and I'm still I still got things, I haven't made peace about, and it's not well in my soul yet, and it will be, one day.
Well, that's one of the things that we can wish upon each other is peace. Peace be still. My family was in turmoil this past weekend, and I just kept repeating that, peace be still. And hopefully, we can find that inner peace and help each other. In the meantime, support each other and help each other to grow and to recover. We are just about out of time. I'm looking at, it's 9:24, so we've just got a few minutes left. I'd like to go, unless anybody has any more comments, I'd like to be able to give Dr. Jaime an opportunity to make any kind of closing comments that he has. Dr. Jaime?
Yeah, thanks very much.
Sure.
There is a lot. There's a lot of trauma and a lot of woundedness, and I think when the description of trauma is in the Native American community and some is wounds where there is no blood, and there is a beautiful loving kindness and a meditation practice that I'll just offer as my last comment. And basically it has three parts. We say, we offer this intention, this hope, a blessing, a prayer of something good for everyone, knowing that we're all on this planet together. And now we're all linked by this pandemic. So we say, may all people be well, in body, mind, and spirit. And may all people be safe. And may all people be joyful. And may all people be peaceful and at ease. And we can turn that to others that we know, friends, neighbors, family, whoever, who might need that little extra support. And that's our intention or our gift or prayer for them, a blessing. You know, may you be well in body, mind, and spirit. May you be safe. May you be joyful. May you be peaceful and at ease. And we could even offer that to people who, not forgiveness, but people who have done some harm, you know, just acknowledging them. And ultimately, for ourselves as well, you know, we say, may I be well in body, mind, and spirit. And may I be safe. May I be joyful. And may I be peaceful and at ease. So the same compassion that we would sometimes extend to others first, we extend to ourselves. And the same that we would extend to ourselves, we extend to others. So thank you for the discussion.
Amen.
Okay,
thank you, Jaime.
Thank you, Jaime. Yeah, thank you, Jaime. Sorry, my printer just started going. I thought it was going to stop. Well, we are pretty much out of time, so I would like to thank everybody for participating on the show. I'd like to thank the people who have streamed in to join us, and hopefully you'll start calling. We have Darlene from Tennessee who just dropped, so thank you for joining us, Darlene. Roberta in Texas, Regular Girl in California, Bill in Florida, and Dr. Jaime calling in from San Diego, California. Thank you all for joining us tonight on the NASCA show. I would like to mention tomorrow night we have a special guest, which is Andrew Perry. Am I saying that correctly, Bill? Out of California,
yes.
Who is a therapist. Okay, Andrew Perry. He's a therapist, and he's executive director of Sexual Assault Awareness. Bill, we've got like a minute or two if you'd like to give that show a plug, if you would, please. Just a really
Andrew's
quickly,
a very
anything?
Good speaker. Andrew's a very good speaker. He's especially known for issues of the sensuality that men experienced in childhood when they were abused sexually in childhood, and how he works with people who are perhaps holding on to a sort of a guilt or a sense of responsibility for having done that. That's one of the specialties he'll talk about tomorrow, I'm sure. And I do recommend the show. I also recommend the Zoom meetings, Sundays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. Check them out by going to the website and reading the article at the very top of the website. Thanks for a great show, Tammy.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you for joining us. I think the Zoom shows have become very popular. So, Dr. Jaime, it's always a pleasure to host with you being here as a special guest. I always learn a lot when you're on the show, so thank you very much. And thank you all for being here. And with that said, I'm going to say God bless the children of the world and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. Good night, everybody.
Blog Talk Radio.